Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to just say again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on my broadcast. Today is Monday, May 10th, 2021. I got to tell you, the weather here in St. Louis, where I broadcast from, is so totally unpredictable. This is supposed to be spring-like, summer-like weather, temperatures hovering around the 70s. Do you know what the high was yesterday? 48 degrees. Wow. Like I said to everyone, if you come here to St. Louis and just hang around for 15 minutes, look at your watch, the weather will be bound to change, and it does. Today on The Cross in the Desert, I want to focus in on the peril and the plight of my dear Iranian friends as refugees in Turkey. The norm for most Iranians when they become Christian in Iran, they find out it's hopelessly impossible to stay there and to be a practicer, a doer of their faith. It's so dangerous. They could end up being in prison and never get out, or they're under surveillance 24/7, and life is horrendous. So they escape. Most of them go through the pathway into Turkey and become asylum seekers, and then the process, the long process, begins as they go through interview after interview, and perhaps someone in the United States will sponsor them. Perhaps they'll be granted a different country to have more freedom and more opportunity to live out their dreams. But living in Turkey these days is very dangerous. It's not like it used to be with Erdogan as the president. It's becoming more Islamic in Turkey. And the UNHCR is really not taking care of those asylum seekers like once before. They deal with discrimination, harassment. They get put in jail. Sometimes the Turkish government deports them back. Well, what I want to do this morning is I want to introduce you in an upfront and close and personal way to three dear Iranians. I want you to get to know them, to hear their story, because you have a valuable part to play in this process. You can become an encourager to them. You can chat with them, write with them, or write to them, and most importantly, pray for them. Right now, I want to read the first story to you about my friend Rogina, who is awaiting sponsorship. Just a few months ago, an Iranian Christian pastor in the United States reached out to Rogina. He wants to sponsor her and her mother. The problem is getting their paperwork to the right channels at the American Embassy in Ankara and linking them with the State Department. We have sent the documents back in the beginning of the year to Ankara, but have yet had any kind of response from the embassy writing back to us, emailing back to us, or contacting them. So this is the frustrating part. But I want you to meet Rogina. I want you to hear her incredible story, because it's a story that is typical of many Iranians, but it's so unique because Rogina and her mother are real survivors. You have a little bit of the background about Rogina and their plight. Now what I want to do is take you into her story that I wrote about her back in September, and it's been on my blog site, The Cross in the Desert. I'm going to take my time. I want you to get to know her, okay? It has been a very long and difficult 8 years in Turkey as a refugee. Most of the day I'm depressed, thinking about all of my friends back in Iran. I miss them so much. I cannot see them or visit them at school. The memories of my childhood have nearly faded away in the chaos of my life. My teenage years have all but been forgotten. I miss the birthday parties with all of my dear friends. I miss not having my own room where I can relax and just be alone. Instead of remembering the few happy times that I had growing up, all I think about every second of every day is, how will I pay the rent and my bills? There are no jobs for me here. It is like living hell on earth in isolation because of this virus. Living in isolation gives me hours to think and ponder about my life. But I want to share with you, all that are listening, really how all this began. I remember being miserable as an 8-year-old child in school. I was forced to read the Quran and pray. I hated wearing the black manteau. It was like a coat that you had to wear, which included the scarf or hijab, and that covered your hair. I hated this clothing. One day, I got so furious that I tore off this silly clothing and left school. My teacher chased after me, shouting, "Don't do that. You are behaving like a sinner." Life at home was really not any easier for me. Parisa was miserable. She had no peace. She felt lost inside. Her parents had pressured her into reading the Quran, and she felt no joy in doing this. My mom had the difficult task of being a single parent after divorcing my father. We were both searching for meaning and purpose in our lives. One day, our neighbor Roya visited us. She could see the misery and the despair in my mother's eyes. Roya was a Christian, but because of fearing the government, she was careful not to intrude too much into our lives. She knew we were Muslims. However, that memorable day, she decided to reach out to us. Roya recommended that we watch Mohabbat TV. Mohabbat TV was a Christian channel beamed into Iran on the satellite. It featured programs about the Bible and Jesus. She also gave my mom a Persian New Testament and asked her to read it. She agreed. One night, my mom had an incredible dream. In her dream, she was visited by Jesus. He burned a symbol of the cross on her arm and said, quote, "This is going to be painful. Being a Christian will not be easy." Parisa woke up frightened. Beads of sweat were rolling down her cheeks. But when she gazed at her left arm, she panicked. There was a burn spot on her arm, just like in the dream. She immediately showed her arm to Roya, and Roya took a picture of it. She sent it to her pastor. A few days later, the pastor visited our home and prayed for my mom. That was the day that she accepted Christ as her Savior and became a Christian. I immediately recognized the dramatic change in my mother's life. She was no longer angry. As a Muslim, she was always angry and never happy. But now she was calm. Her change in behavior was like heaven for me. The pastor gave me a children's Bible and instructed me to read the story of Jesus. I remember how different Jesus was compared to Muhammad. Jesus was kind and compassionate. As a Muslim, all I ever remembered was anger and violence. I never knew what true love was. Jesus was kind and compassionate. One story in the Gospels made a big impact on my life. The night before his crucifixion, when the soldiers came to arrest Jesus, Peter becomes angry and cuts off the ear of Malchus, one of the servants of the high priest. However, Jesus rebuked him and instead healed the servant's ear. I was so impressed by the kindness that Jesus showed his enemies. This story changed my heart and changed my life. At the age of 8 years old, I asked Jesus into my heart, Christian. After becoming a Christian, one of the first things I wanted to do was to share how Jesus changed my life with my friends at school. However, my mother warned me, don't do it, for a Muslim to change their religion in Iran is very serious. They can be imprisoned or put to death. I was so excited about my newfound faith, and I just wanted to tell everyone. As soon as I got home from school, I turned on the Christian music. I played it loud. It filled my heart and mind with so much joy. One of my favorite hobbies is painting. I would make paintings of the cross and decorate the walls of my room with them. For the first time in my life, I was so happy. However, my happiness ended whenever I walked through the doors of the school. I was so frustrated that I could not share my faith with my friends. I had to pretend that I still liked Islam and wear that stupid hijab. One day, I told my teacher that I couldn't take it anymore. I explained to her, I'm reading the Bible now. Well, the teacher was astonished. Right away, she contacted my mom. She warned her that I must change my behavior or else be expelled from school. Well, my mom took me aside and gently persuaded me to be patient. Just obey your teacher. Okay, I reluctantly agreed. I was a straight-A student at school, excelled in all of my studies, but the day the teacher found out that I was reading the Bible, she began lowering all of my grades from A to C's. The living waters of happiness that I had found in Jesus was slowly drying up from the persecution at school. However, I will never forget one of the darkest times of my life. When I was 11 years old, I was sexually abused. My uncle had a friend who was a math teacher. He would often come over to our home. He knew that I was struggling in school, so he offered to help me with math, and my mother agreed. He was a Muslim and knew that we were Christians, but seemed not to be offended or really disturbed by our faith. Whenever my mom left me alone at home, this Muslim man would instruct me in my studies. However, for a solid year, he did more than tutor me in math. He began touching me, putting his hands all over my body. I was terrified. I didn't know what to do. He would stare intently into my eyes and warn me, if you tell your mother, I will report you to the government. All I knew how to do was to pray and to cry out to Jesus. And Jesus answered my prayers. We loved meeting with other Christians in our home. We were part of a house church movement, meeting secretly for fear of the government. We played our music loud in celebration and raised our voices loudly in prayer at almost every meeting. One day, the police came to our house while we were on vacation. Fortunately, we were not there. When we returned home, our pastor told us that we must immediately leave and go to Turkey. We were in danger of being arrested. Instead of going to Turkey, my mom took us to a small town named Mianadob, where we hid out from the government for about a year and a half. It was then that I realized that Jesus had answered my prayers. He had allowed the police to come to our house, so we had to move. When we moved, the sexual abuse ended. It was the last time I would ever see that Muslim man. I was finally safe and protected. The nightmare had ended. In 2013, we finally moved to Turkey after an undercover agent came to our home looking for my mother. We sold everything that we had and left our homeland. It is so sad to say goodbye to the people that you love just to find freedom. We lived for 2 months in Istanbul with my mother's friend, Afsana. As refugees, we were prohibited from getting jobs, so my mother secretly opened up a bakery at home and began selling delicious pastries to all of the Iranian tourists. We desperately needed a place to live, and one of my mother's friends connected us with an Iranian man. The Iranian man agreed to help and find us a place. This was one of the worst mistakes that we ever made. This man became controlling. He became abusive. He demanded money from us for the rent, groceries, bills. It was like living back in Iran. Then one day, he tried to sexually abuse me. Horrible memories of abuse flooded my mind from when I lived back in Iran. He tried to kiss me, but I resisted. He even tried to sexually abuse my mom. We quickly packed up our few belongings and left. A year after living in Turkey, my mother received her first interview with the UNHCR in Ankara. Her interviewer was a Muslim woman. For 5 or 6 hours, my mother explained to her why she became a Christian. She shared with her the incredible dream and how Jesus had changed her life forever. Unfortunately, she was rejected. The interviewer didn't believe her story. We found out later that unless we had documents about our baptism, that the immigration board would simply continue to reject us. Living in Turkey as refugees is extremely difficult. Struggling to provide money for rent and food and waiting forever to be interviewed, well, it took a toll on us emotionally. It was during this time that I spent most of the day praying and gazing at the beautiful gold cross that I proudly wore around my neck. I was comforted whenever I gazed upon the cross. However, wearing my cross necklace in public brought much conflict and persecution to me. I was harassed by many young Muslims, but I refused to hide or cover up my necklace. I loved Jesus. I was unashamed to wear it. I told every single person that I met, this is who I am. I am a Christian. I love Jesus. One day, while at the shopping market, the owner saw the cross around my neck and threw me out of his store. He scolded me and said, "You are a sinner. You need to return to Islam. You are going to hell." I was never afraid to share my faith in Jesus. I would always look at my cross and say, "Jesus is with me all of the time. I have no fear." This personal declaration of faith that Jesus is always with me proved to be an incredible reality that saved my life. In 2018, I was finally offered a job in a hotel working as a translator selling sweets to customers. I waited for hours to speak with the manager. It was almost 2 in the morning. I had no way home, and there were no taxis. Finally, the manager appeared, and he offered to drive me home. I sat in the back seat. I remembered feeling really nervous. Something just didn't feel right. Something was wrong. A few minutes later, he pulled the car over and asked me to sit in the front seat next to him. I said, "No." "Feeling uneasy and afraid? Are you scared?" he asked me. A few minutes passed by, and he forced me into the front seat next to him. I was terrified. My mind was filled with the horrible memories of being sexually molested years ago in Iran. "Are you a Christian?" he asked me. "Don't you ever have sex?" My whole body was trembling. I grabbed my cell phone but couldn't get a signal to call my mom. "No, I don't have sex," I replied, my voice trembling. "That's a sin before marriage." I looked down at my necklace and nervously began praying, mumbling the words, crying out for Jesus to save me. He began to put his hand on my legs when suddenly his cell phone rang. It was his wife. She demanded to know where he was. His wife had become my angel. He finally drove me home and said he would see me again the next day, but I never went back. This is my story so far. I turned 22 this year. It's been another long day in the city of Yalova, Turkey. Another long day in isolation. But as I think back to where I was 8 years ago and remember the day that Jesus came into my life, I am no longer depressed. Deep down in my soul, I am so grateful. I have joy. I know that Jesus is with me. He will never leave or forsake me. He has a special purpose for my life. I am holding on to my faith in Jesus. I can honestly confess to you that if I wasn't a Christian, I would have ended my life a long time ago. But thank God I didn't. In the midst of turmoil, I have peace. I have peace because I know God has a purpose and a plan for my life. He has made me a light in the darkness of Turkey. What a story. That is Rojina. And I can tell you, just recently, Rojina and her mother, Parisa, were canceled from working at their job because of the virus. They were actually working in a factory that made flowers. They put together flower pots, flower designs. It was a hard, backbreaking, hot job in this big greenhouse. But because of the virus and the spreading of it, they've now been forced to go back into isolation. Please pray that the documents we sent to Ankara will get in the right hands and they can soon leave Turkey and come right here into the United States. What an answer to prayer that would be. I want to talk to you now about my other friend, Leyla Hassanian. Leyla Hassanian, hard name to pronounce. Leyla is a master of languages. She knows Arabic. She knows English. She knows the Persian language, of course. And she's working actually in an office setting as a translator. But I want to tell you a little bit about her background and her plight to stay alive in Turkey, really. She's on a list to be deported back, and I'll explain why, so she needs our prayers. But let's listen to her story now. My name is Leyla Hassanian. I was born into a tribal family in the southern part of Iran. I was the second child of parents who had been waiting for many years for the birth of a son. My birth disappointed them. My father was the eldest son of the tribal family. He was desperate for the birth of a male child in order to carry on the family legacy and establish his name. No one was happy with my birth. Even my own grandparents were sad. It wasn't until 4 years later that they were blessed with the birth of a son. That's when the celebration began and the dark clouds of sadness were lifted from their lives. During my childhood and adolescence, all of the family attention was focused on my brother, and no attention was ever given to the girls. At the age of 20, I became the victim of a forced marriage. My father chose my husband, and my marriage was a disaster from the very beginning. My husband, well, he wasn't pleased with me. Very soon afterwards, we fled to Turkey to become refugees, and that's when my life became almost unbearable. There was no love and communication in our marriage. I couldn't get a job, and I suffered day and night under the harsh control of my husband. I became very depressed, and although I sought counseling and therapy for relief, I couldn't find any help. Unable to sleep at nights because of the stress, I began taking sleeping pills. The immigration office refused to give me any help for any of my marital problems, and one night, I escaped to Ankara. I applied for a divorce at a court in Ankara, and after a week, the immigration office deported me back to the same city that my husband was living in. They detained me and placed me in a larger central detention center where I suffered miserably for 60 days. I could not prove to the courts that my life was in danger. If I was sent back to Iran, I'm in a very sad situation. I couldn't prove to them that I was in danger if I was sent back to Iran. So now because of that, I am currently in danger of being deported. I have no ID cards, no interviews with the UNHCR, no human rights, and I'm forced to work 12 hours a day, earning only a dollar an hour. While I'm at work, I am the constant target of sexual and psychological harassment from men. However, in the midst of all of the darkness and despair, I have found my hope in Jesus. I am busy studying the Christian faith with other Iranian Christians. For the first time in my life, I have real peace in my heart. Please pray for me and be my voice. If I'm deported back to Iran, they will deal harshly with me as a Christian. I will surely be imprisoned for the rest of my life. Be my voice in Turkey. I don't want to die. That's the amazing story of Layla. What a sad childhood she had, a disastrous marriage, but she is a Christian. She wants to be baptized, but because of coronavirus and meeting with other Christians, they can't do that. They meet online. She is a faithful follower of Jesus. So please pray for my dear friend Layla, for her to stay safe and not be deported back to Iran. That is her prayer request. Finally, today, I want to talk to you about an Iranian Christian convert who's facing deportation from Turkey and separation from his paraplegic son. Now, this convert would be separated from his wife and his paraplegic son, and he risks re-arrest and imprisonment if he's deported back to Iran. His name is Bajan Hagahiji. Bajan Hagahiji. He's 48 years old. He's currently in a camp in Altayla, southwest Turkey. He's awaiting deportation because he has failed with his appeals to two Turkish courts. Now, it was last Thursday, April 29th, a couple weeks ago, that he was taken to the camp, and the Supreme Court in Ankara ruled against him. He was given a deportation notice because of an alleged failure to sign at a local police station in their resident city in Dizili for 3 months, something he denies. He denies that he's failed to sign. His wife, Marzia, told Article 18, that is the writer of this article, that Bajan had even asked the officials to check the cameras on the dates he attended, but that they responded they could not do so. Well, these cameras would verify that he signed at the police station. Bajan and Marzia have been together in Turkey with their son, Sina, who was 17, since 2018. When they applied for asylum with the UNHCR, as a result of persecution they faced in Iran as Christian converts. Now, they initially applied for asylum years earlier, with Bajan facing a 3-year prison sentence for his membership of a house church. But when they learned that the lawyer defending Bajan was going to have his license revoked, and that the elderly couple who had paid for Bajan's bail were going to lose their house, Bajan felt compelled to return to Iran. Quote, I returned to Iran because of my humanity and faith. It was not right in God's sight for me to want to stay with my family in Turkey and have the house documents of an old man and woman who were really not in a very good condition. If I stayed in Turkey, their house would be 100% confiscated. So Bajan returned to Iran and submitted himself to Abal Abad prison in Shiraz. He was released on parole 9 months later on the condition that he leave Iran immediately. You have to leave Iran or we will arrest you again, he was told. Like your other friends who were arrested again, you will face heavier sentences and deportation. We know your family is in Turkey, the interrogator said. We know which city they're in. We know all of this. If you leave the country, you won't have a problem. But if you stay and make a mistake, we will sentence you to prison many times over. Let be a reminder, we accept your conditional release on these terms. Sign it. So Bajan signed it, received his parole, left the prison in Iran, and joined his family in Denizli. But now, here's the situation. He faces the threat of another forced separation from his family and return to Iran and all the dangers that may entail, including rearrest and imprisonment. Bajan has gone on the record as saying he converted to Christianity because of the suffocating pressure of the Iranian regime, and he has already been sentenced to 50 lashes for his conversion, a sentence that was eventually changed to a hefty fine. The judge who sentenced him back in 2013 at the Revolutionary Court in Shiraz told him explicitly that Christian converts like Bajan must be stopped and threatened him with a 10-year sentence. We have no problem with those who inherit religion from their parents being in the country, the judge says, but not those who leave Islam and join other religions. We have a problem with these people, and we must help them and guide them and prevent them from deviating in this way. They are being misled, and they are misleading others. This is why we must stop them from now on so that they do not cause others to deviate. The imprisonment of these people and the flogging of this gentleman should be an example for the rest of those who like to change their religion for any reason, that this is not something we can change. And because Bajan is from a family or direct descendant from the prophet, quote, Muhammad, the judge mandated that his 50 lashes should be carried out with maximum force and that his sentence should not be repealed. The government of the Islamic Republic is completely opposed to those who change their religion and either become Baha'is or Christians or Jews or Zoroastrians, Bajan explained in his 2020 interview. For this reason, the government infiltrates or pursues these converts in an attempt to destroy them or prevent them from further meetings because the repetition of these meetings and the additions of new members to each group is in a way to the deterrent of the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's why agents come and arrest these converts, to put pressure on them, harass them, take their belongings, their money, their jewelry, anything, and no one can complain. Bajan was a hand craftsman in Iran. He had many personal belongings confiscated when he was arrested, including several tools handed down to him from his father that he learned the trade from. Well, the tools were never given back. And after his release, Bajan's work permit was revoked. While the medical center where his son went through, they refused to treat him any longer. I was told, your license has been revoked and you cannot work at all. I said, so what should I do? And the agent said, you can go and buy a taxi. I said that I work at home and I love my job and want to continue. They said, if you continue, you will get into trouble again. The threat of deportation has been hanging over Bajan since he first arrived in Turkey. Back in 2020, in an interview, Bajan said, quote, in 2014, I had to send my wife and paraplegic child to Turkey to seek asylum. In my absence, they suffered a lot. If I'm deported now, what will be their fate now? We have many problems in Turkey. Our asylum insurance has been terminated, and we do not have a work permit. Whenever they find out that we are Christians, they treat us so badly. On the other hand, we are under pressure from the Islamic Republic not to return. We are asking petition to stop their deportation has been created through change.org. And that is something very, very important. So you've heard Bajan's story, quite an interesting story. He explains the reasons why if you're from a Christian family living in Iran, that's acceptable, although the state will control your church services. But if you're from a Muslim family in Iran and you change your religion, that could mean the death sentence. So I like in this article how Bajan has explained to us who may not understand what the plight of Christian converts are like in Iran, what life is like for them. And he's also in a situation here where he was told he didn't sign into a police station. That's a duty that he has to perform for over 3 months. And so because he didn't do that or obey the rules, he's being threatened to be deported back to Iran, which was told to him when he was there last time, you need to leave or we're going to arrest you and imprison you for a long time. If he goes back, he's surely going to face imprisonment. And there he will be separated from his wife and paraplegic son. So what we need to do, we need to pray for this man. We need to speak up for his man and be a voice for Bijan. And once I get a hold of the petition, I'm going to put it on my Facebook page and you can sign it. But I wanted you to hear the stories today of my Iranian friends. I want you to understand what life is like for refugees that live in Iran. Next time you get together with your Bible study group or go to church or just with your family, please remember Rosina, Layla, and Bijan, and talk to Jesus about their situation. Pray for him to move powerfully in their lives. I want to take just a couple of minutes break here for a beautiful worship song. We'll be right back in about 5 minutes. This is Pat Barrett and Build My Life.
Worthy of every song we could ever sing, worthy of all the praise we could ever bring, worthy of every breath we could ever breathe. We live for you, oh, we live for you, Jesus. Jesus, the name above.
Worthy of
Beautiful worship music from Pat Barrett and Chris Tomlin. The song appropriately titled Build My Life. That's exactly what Regina and Layla and Bijan have done. They have surrendered. They have built their life on the foundation of Christ. And because of that, they suffer tremendously. Persecution, harassment. Let this be a reminder to you and me of the great freedoms we still have here in America. We're fighting for them every day, but we still have them here to worship. And I just want to remind us that when you think of Regina and Layla and Bijan, please pray for them. Specifically pray, number one, Regina and her parents gets a call from an embassy in Ankara or gets an email and then connects them with this pastor in the United States. The documents are all in order. They want to adopt them. They want to sponsor them. It's just getting the two channels together, people talking. That's the difficult thing. Please pray for Layla to keep Turkey from deporting her back, that she will get proper identification, that she will get everything settled with the government there and she can stay. And please also pray for Bijan, that he will not be deported back, then have to leave his son and leave his wife in Turkey. His son is a paraplegic, very difficult situation. But God can make a way. God can open a door that no man can shut. And we're praying for Regina, Layla, and Bijan today. I want to thank you for taking this journey with me to meet my Iranian friends in Turkey. Please share their stories on your page. Please share this radio broadcast. God bless you. Thank you so much. Have a great week, and I will see you again on Thursday on the Cross in the Desert. Have a great week.